Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, we've heard about the potential of stem cells for years, and now clinics are popping up all over the country offering injections and promising miracles. The catch? They're incredibly expensive and entirely unregulated. Journalist Laura Beale looked into the commercial marketing of stem cells for her podcast Bad Batch and met people who were badly injured by tainted injections.
Were you afraid that you were going to lose her?
I knew I was going to lose her.
Our conversation starts after a short break. Imagine a single remedy that could treat severe burns, arthritis, Parkinson's disease, and multiple sclerosis just for starters. Even if it wasn't covered by insurance and cost thousands of dollars out of pocket, it would seem worth it, right, for that kind of miracle? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. For a long time now, we've heard that stem cells might be that miracle. At first, research centered around repurposed fetal cells, which made it controversial. But later, scientists learned to harvest stem cells from bone marrow, fat, and umbilical cord blood. In the last couple of years, clinics have popped up all over the country offering stem cell therapy as a fix for everything from worn cartilage to Alzheimer's to chronic pain. It sounds so easy. Pay your money, get your injection, let the healing begin. But as my guest has discovered, the fact that you can buy yourself some stem cells today does not actually mean the FDA has approved their use for what ails you. And in some cases, the only miracle for stem cell patients is that treatments gone wrong did not kill them. Laura Beale is a health and science writer and creator and host of the six-part podcast Bad Batch about the hazards of unregulated stem cell injections. She also wrote and hosted the podcast Dr. Death. Laura, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Okay, so I didn't realize stem cells had become a multi-billion dollar industry already. But help us understand this. They are not FDA approved to treat most of the conditions they're used for?
That's right. Stem cells are a very promising field in medicine. There's a subject of a lot of legitimate research. But the ads that you're seeing on your social media feed or that you're seeing in clinics or in newspapers, all of those treatments are not FDA approved.
So how are clinics able to use stem cells when they couldn't use a brand new drug that hadn't yet been approved?
That is an excellent question. It depends on the type of stem cell being used. They're coming from three main sources: your own body tissues, bone marrow or fat, as you mentioned, or umbilical cord cells. So the cells that are coming from your own body, the cells from the bone marrow or from the fat, those are being offered because they are considered your own tissues. So the FDA said you could move around your own tissues. You could get a skin graft from your own tissues. And so those have been categorized as long as you don't do anything to them, as long as you don't grow them or manipulate them to, you know, in any way, you can take your own cells and move them from one part of your body to another. So that's why that's being offered. Then there's a third source of stem cells, which is from birth products, umbilical cords, amniotic tissue, placenta. Those are a little bit more of a gray area, and we can talk about that more later. But those are also, the companies are registering those also as, you know, homologous use tissues, which means they are, you know, you're just moving cells around. But to be honest, I am still not clear how those are being offered because you're not moving that within your own body. And that I really can't explain as much as I would like to.
So your podcast opens with a pretty amazing story of recovery. Tell us about this elderly woman and the burns she'd suffered.
Right. So at the very opening, there's a scene of a woman who suffers a severe burn on her hand, welding a gate, and a welding torch passes over the top of her hand. And she gets a very severe burn, and she talks with her son, who lives in Southern California, and the burn is not getting better. And after a while, her son suggests that she comes out to Southern California, where he lives, and has stem cells, and uses the stem cells to treat the burn on her hand. And she goes out, she gets an IV of stem cells, and her hand heals.
Okay, so how would stem cells know how to go to the hand and heal what's wrong with this woman?
Well, that's another unclear area. That the people who sell you the stem cells would say that they just know where to go. There are chemical signals that attract the stem cells, and they know what part of your body to go to. They know what's needed. They know what kind of tissue you need to form. But the science says that's not exactly the case. So why her hand would heal, scientifically, we wouldn't know that. We don't know exactly why anyone who has some of these unapproved treatments gets better, and people do. But there's all kinds of reasons why people get better, including the number one reason that a lot of problems that we have just get better over time. If you have a sore knee and you go a certain period of time, it will just get better. And so that's one reason why we need to do the studies on this, because you can't tell if it's just time or if it's the result of anything that you did.
So this woman and her son definitely believed that that treatment was useful. Who is he?
He is a man named John Kosel-Sharon. And as you learn later in the podcast, he would actually, after this burn incident and through a series of other events, he would go on to form a stem cell company called Livion. And that company uses the types of stem cells that I mentioned earlier from umbilical cord blood. And they harvest the umbilical cord blood after the birth of healthy babies and then take the stem cells and put that into a product that then they sell. And so he founds a company in 2016 that starts selling this product. And essentially, it's just off-the-shelf stem cells. It's not... any medical provider can do it in a few minutes, which has really driven a lot of the industry. Because if you're taking bone marrow, you have to have a bone marrow extraction. If you're taking fat cells, you have to do liposuction and extract those stem cells. And those require a lot more infrastructure. They require a physician to do it. But these stem cells that are just come in an injection, you order it, they arrive in your office. You thaw them out and you can give them, and they're very quick.
Okay, so I've had a couple of babies from my body, and I was asked if I wanted to bank the cord blood. At the time, I couldn't afford it, so I didn't do that. Did that mean that someone was able to take all that material and sell it to a stem cell company?
They couldn't have done it without your permission. You do have to sign a permission form. I did see a permission form, and it's not exactly clear where this is going. So what mothers are told a lot of times, I think, I haven't been in the room, I haven't been privy to the conversation, so I have to have a caveat that I have not directly witnessed this. But what I can infer from the form is that they're told if you donate these cells, they can be used for research, they can be used for cancer treatment, which is the one approved use for cancer treatment, and that these cells are going to help people. I am skeptical how much women are told when they donate these cells, thinking that they're helping someone else or they're helping science. I'm unclear how much they really understand that these cells are actually going for a commercial enterprise.
So initially, the company that John Kosel-Sharon contacted to provide him with stem cells that he would then distribute to clinics all over the country, they were just making cells specifically for like the kind of lab research that you've talked about.
Yeah, they had some previous work with genetics. I don't know that much about what they had previously done. I do know that their founder was, just from looking at their website, they were doing some things with CRISPR, like gene editing. But they did not have experience making stem cells. And so they were approached by John Kosel-Sharon to see if they wanted to go into the stem cell business. And so they said yes. And right now, that's about all it takes to go into the stem cell business.
So if you know how to do it, you can open a lab anywhere
and
sell these things. Okay. Let's put a pin in that for a minute and talk about the kind of thing that has caused many people to seek out this treatment. A lot of people in pain in the world. Here in Texas, a number of people had read some newspaper columns that made them think this might be the right treatment for them or for a loved one. How did Elaine Dilley decide this might help her mom?
Elaine Dilley read a column about stem cells in her local newspaper, the Brazosport Facts. So Elaine Dilley lives in Brazoria County, south of Houston. And her mother was in severe pain from arthritis. Now, That said, she was 89. She was living on her own. She was driving. She was, except for the arthritis, she was actually pretty healthy and independent. But it's hard to see your parent in pain day after day.
Yeah.
And they had tried other treatments that really had not worked. And then she reads in the local column about stem cells. The columnist herself had had stem cells, and it had helped her. It had helped her daughter. And so she wanted to tell other people, like, hey, this is a great thing that could help you too. And so she read about this, and there were several columns about this woman's experience, the columnist's experience. And so she decided to try it. She was convinced. So she went to a clinic. It was in Missouri City, a suburb of Houston, and signed her mother up for it.
It was not cheap.
No, it was not cheap. And these treatments are not cheap. She ended up paying around $17,000 that she didn't have. She had to finance it. She had to take out a loan to pay this. And a lot of patients are taking out loans, they're financing it, they're spending their retirement. It's not like most of us don't have thousands of dollars laying around that we can spend on this. So yes, she took out a loan and signed her mother up for it, and her mother had the injections.
So by the next morning, her mom, whose name is Dorothy, was really struggling. What happened when they called the place where she was treated with these stem cells and said, something's not right?
So at first, you have to keep in mind that this clinic had not had severe complications before. So at first they were like, oh, it's normal, she'll be fine. But after a couple of days, it was clear that her mother was not going to be fine. And she was getting more and more ill. She was in severe pain. She was vomiting. I mean, this was not like normal soreness that you might have after an injection or anything like that. But the clinic, I think probably to give them the benefit of the doubt, they didn't realize the severity of the symptoms. They called in some pain medication, but that it was clear that she needed more than that. So eventually Elaine ended up calling an ambulance for her mother to come get her.
So they take her to the hospital, and they're frantic, right? They can't quite figure out what the problem is.
At some point, right. And they did find the problem at some point, which they determined that her mother was suffering from a very severe infection. At what point they did, I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, all they knew when they took her to the hospital was that she had had these stem cell injections a few days before.
So Elena's there with her mom, and she gets this weird text.
Yeah, she's in the they did figure out it was an infection. And Elaine, meanwhile, but previously she had been texting the assistant to the chiropractor. She had gotten these at a chiropractic, through a chiropractic clinic. And at first she's asking, is there some way to reverse the effects of the stem cells? Because my mother is really in severe pain. And the assistant texts her back and says, there's no way to reverse, like, what happened to you. And then I believe it was the next morning, Elaine gets this very odd text that references a couple of other people. And she doesn't recognize this. And she thinks this seems like a text that wasn't meant for me. And then it dawns on her, it wasn't meant for her. It was meant for her boss. And these two other people that are being referenced are people she had just had casual conversations with, meeting them in the waiting room of the clinic where they got their injections.
And so she said something to the doctor.
Yes. And she asked the doctor, is there anybody else here that's having a bad reaction to stem cells? Because up until that point, she had thought it was just this fluke thing that her mother had experienced. And the doctor didn't, as she told me, the doctor didn't say yes, but she could tell from his body language that yes, there were other patients in that hospital who were suffering the same problems her mother was.
My guest is journalist Laura Beale. We're talking about her 6-part podcast, Bad Batch, about the hazards of unregulated stem cell injections. Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is health and science journalist Laura Beale. We're talking about her 6-part podcast, Bad Batch, which is available now. It's about the hazards of unregulated stem cell injections. How did direct-to-consumer stem cell clinics start to spring up in different places? Because often they don't start as stem cell clinics. They're, like you said, a chiropractic clinic or something, right?
Yeah, there are different ways that they are. There are some clinics now that are just in the stem cell business only, but I think that's a relatively recent phenomenon. Most of the time, it's probably a practitioner that has a stem cell business as a sideline. I think that's probably the majority of cases. So they're common in orthopedics. So you might have an orthopedic surgeon who offers stem cells. More recently, you have chiropractic clinics that are offering stem cells as a sideline. So I don't know if anybody just opens as only stem cells, but there currently are certainly clinics now who are just in the stem cell business.
So what kind of training does someone need to be able to provide this to people?
Well, if you're doing the bone marrow cells, obviously you need the expertise of an MD. If you're doing the birth products like the ones featured in the podcast, you basically just need to know how to do an injection, how to administer injections, say, in a joint, and you're good to go.
So how are stem cells marketed to chiropractors and doctors and different people who are providing them?
So the ones that are the products, the off-the-shelf products, and I focus on one company, but there's more than one company out there. Those are sold directly to the providers. So the companies themselves have representatives, much like a pharmaceutical company. You have drug reps that go out in the field and they talk to doctors and they say, here's this product and you can offer this product to your patients for this amount. So in that regard, it's pretty much, from what I gather, just standard like a drug would be offered.
So if someone like Elaine Dilley spent $17,000 on this treatment for her mother, what were you able to learn about what the chiropractor spent on those off-the-shelf stem cells?
That's something that I was able to do in the podcast that really we've not had a window into. Everyone knows that it must be lucrative. It's because it's growing too fast. It's growing too fast. It's advertised too much. I think it was always assumed that it was lucrative. But I was able to, at least in this instance, get a real handle on how lucrative it is. Patients are paying $5,000 a shot because they know, or they assume, that it's cutting edge, it's science, it must be expensive to obtain. In fact, I found out you can actually manufacture it very cheaply. And I don't know if I should give away a spoiler for for people who haven't listened to the podcast, but it is shockingly cheap. How much it is. And everybody's making money along the way.
So why make it so expensive? What does that have to do with how well it works?
It has nothing to do with how well it works. It has to do with what the market will bear. I mean, this is how, and stem cells are not alone in this. This is how drugs are commonly priced. That's why we have, cancer drugs that cost $100,000 a dose. It's what the market will bear, what you think you can get for that drug. Now, with drugs, there's R&D that goes into it, and there's more cost than that. But you could charge whatever you want for it. And in fact, in the podcast, one of the doctors in the podcast decided that he was actually going to offer it cheaper to undercut the market, and still make a profit. But there, you can charge what you want for it.
So, at the very least, I would imagine people go in for these treatments thinking it may or may not work for me. I want to try it, but it can't hurt me. So what do we know about the safety of these injections?
That is an assumption, and that's what they're told. I went to several seminars. There's one featured in the podcast, but I went to more than one. And in every instance, I can tell you, in every single instance, it was like, oh, there are no side effects. Stem cells are natural. These stem cells, we've been using them. Side effects are very rare. So I would imagine that the vast majority of people think it won't hurt you. I would even go so far as to say, based on the sales job, they're convinced it's going to work because they hear nothing negative about it. It's hard to hear anything negative about it. And your source of the major source of information about stem cells is by and large coming from the people trying to sell it to you. And that's one reason why I wanted to do this podcast and to do the story. There's also a written story in Texas Monthly. And the reason I wanted to do it is to try to help inform people as to what the real situation is.
So when you went to these seminars, are they making promises? Like if you have you know, a degenerated joint that it will heal itself. If you have Parkinson's disease, you'll be better. If you have Alzheimer's, are they specifically making those promises?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, like they're promise. Yeah, they're making promises, and even when it's a little bit couched, it's still great. Like, well, you might need more than one dose to get better. I heard that a lot.
Like, if it doesn't work, just add more.
yes, and in fact, one of the things I was also able to obtain was they called it a dosing chart of how many stem cells that you would need for a particular condition, and. And it looked like simple multiplication. Like the more complicated the disease, the more stem cells that you would need. And of course, I ran that by an actual stem cell expert who said, you know, these numbers are completely arbitrary that they're recommending. But it did look like multiplication. Like you start out lower if you have a wrist joint, say, a little higher for a knee. If you have something complicated like neuropathy or so I forgot what other diseases on there. Autism, you know, you just add more, and you get more effect, which is not how science works.
And it also makes it sound as if all of these diseases have been individually studied and different doses tested. It sounds like that's not happened.
No. Now there is research going on. There's a lot of really interesting and legitimate research on most of the diseases that I heard mentioned, but we're not there yet in terms of being able to offer something to patients, even with probably the most common use, which is for knee osteoarthritis. I don't have data on it, but based on the advertisements, I think knees are probably one of the most common reasons, bad knees are what, that people turn to stem cells. We don't even have the research on knees yet, and that's the most common use. I did go back and try to look at studies on knees because I thought, well, that's going to be where we have the most data. And in all of the literature, I could only find two placebo-controlled trials on knee osteoarthritis. And one of them was an extension of the other. And in that study, the placebo had as much effectiveness as the stem cell treatment, like in terms of pain relief.
All right, I want to go to the phones. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. We have Flora on the line in Cleburne, Texas. Hi, Flora.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to tell you an experience that our family has had with stem cells. I'm a nurse, and my son was in a car accident, and he lost the use of his arm. Sorry, I was carrying groceries. After being rear-ended by four cars, and so he had months and months of therapy, and he ended up going to, and his arm was dead. I mean, like, he had no movement. It was atrophying. And the head neurosurgeon was his doctor, and he told him, Leonard, your arm is never going to come back. So his wife was a trauma ICU nurse and found a doctor in Cork, Ireland, who injected stem cells into his cervical area, and his arm came back.
Wow, Flora, I'm so happy to hear that your son is so much better. Thank you so much for calling. Laura, I know you've met people like Flora's son who say, it worked for me, it was a miracle, and nobody else could fix me. How do scientists who say we're not there yet with stem cell therapies account for all the people who have gotten better?
Well, first of all, I'm really glad that he's better, and I don't doubt that he is better. What I would say is we need to do the science. So he got better, but we don't know if the next person that comes along and spends a lot of money will get better. That's why we need to do the science on it. You know, with any other drug, if you went to me and you said, I need to use this drug for my shoulder, for my arm, that it hurts, we would be able to say, well, here's what the studies say. Here's the odds that it would work. We know which kinds of patients it works in. We know how much to give. We know all of these things. And so you walk into it knowing the odds that it will work and knowing the best population to use the treatment on. We don't know that with stem cells. So I don't doubt that there are people getting better with stem cells. But until we do the science, we don't really know why. We don't know, is it something in that shot? Is it the placebo effect? Is the next person that comes along and pays a lot of money for stem cells going to have the same success?
So what do we know about what went wrong for Dorothy O'Connell and the other people who got sick in South Texas?
Their stem cells were contaminated with bacteria. It was not from the stem cells themselves, but I still think this tells you a lot about the industry, because if you go back and look at a lot of what was going on in the laboratory that was making the stem cells, it was clear that they weren't following procedures. I couldn't tell that it really even looked like they exactly knew what they were doing from, you know, and clearly they messed up. So there were lots that were contaminated. One thing that's interesting about this incident is that I was able to discover that there was contamination and there were people getting hurt before this incident in Texas. There were reports of infections that were happening long before this, months before this. The reason that the situation in Texas came to our attention is because of coincidence, because you happen to have three people in the hospital at the same time who found each other from a misdirected text and connected the dots. And had that not happened, those contaminated vials might still be making people sick.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Is there any way to guarantee that you're actually getting stem cells if you decide after all this information that you still want to chance it? I mean, an injection looks like an injection for most of us who don't know any better.
No, there's not. And that's one of the controversies. Some of the critics of the industry say that, first of all, you don't know if you're getting actual stem cells, if the cells in that vial are stem cells. And second, you don't know if the stem cells that are in that vial are alive, because human cells are fragile. And if there's something that you do wrong in the process of freezing them or thawing them or processing them, you can kill them. And I did in one of the episodes of the podcast, the product that the people were getting was tested. If you go to the seminars, they will give you their own evaluation of what it is and say, of course, there are live cells and there are this many stem cells. But those have not been through scientific review to know how rigorous their testing process was.
So certainly states could regulate this. You discover that the state of Texas has, the legislature has sort of gone out of its way to ensure that this treatment is available to people who want it.
Yes, Texas is very welcoming in terms of stem cells. And this is rooted in good intentions, I'm sure, of making treatments available to people who have no options and want to try something that their doctor can't offer, that's not FDA approved, and trying to make this available to them. And Texas in 2017 actually made it really, really easy for stem cell clinics to open up. And we probably here have some of the most lax stem cell regulations in the country. And that's by design, because the legislature wanted this type of therapy to be available.
So I don't want to give too much up, but this happens early in the podcast, or maybe I'm thinking of the Texas Monthly piece. But what sort of track record in business did John Kolsel-Sharon have before he got into the stem cell game?
He had an interesting history before this. I'll give you a few little details for those of you that haven't heard it, but he had no science background, and he had different companies that he started up. If you ask him, he'll say that he started up a lot of successful companies. But one of the companies he was involved in turned out to be a Ponzi scheme, actually, here in Dallas. Now, the two leaders of the Ponzi scheme went to prison. He was not criminally charged in that, but he did have some disciplinary action from the SEC on that. He also had some involvement in a business that sold compounded pain creams, which are specially made pain creams, and a lot of those businesses have been caught up in healthcare fraud schemes, and so he was involved with that as well. And so he was actually out on bail when he started the stem cell company.
You spent a lot of time with him. You have a lot of interview tape with him in the podcast. I was a little...
And there's a lot more beyond what's in there.
I was surprised that he would talk to you. With all due respect to your journalistic abilities.
Yeah, he was very willing. I have to say, he was very willing to talk to me about it. He talked for hours. We have probably 6 hours of tape of conversations with him. I don't know why he did. I'm happy he did. I was happy to talk to him about, you know, anything. He was happy to talk about anything. I certainly wanted to give him a chance to tell his side of the story, and that's in the podcast. In fact, one of the criticisms I've gotten from the podcast is that he was too sympathetic a character. But I didn't want to do a hit job. I wanted you to make up your own mind about him. Let him give his own explanation, and you can decide, you know, how much of that is true or not. Certainly, I challenged the outright untruths, but I did want to give him a chance to talk. It was also good, you know, in Dr. Death, the main character is absent the whole podcast. Like, I never talked to Christopher Dent, and I never heard from him. So I did actually want to give one of the main characters a chance to tell his own story.
My guest is journalist Laura Beal. We're talking about her new 6-part podcast, Bad Batch, about the hazards of unregulated stem cell injections. Before this, she was also responsible for the podcast Dr. Death. Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is investigative journalist Laura Beal. She reports on health and science topics and has a new podcast out, 6 parts, called Bad Batch. It's about unregulated stem cell injections. So there are certain elective procedures that you can buy for yourself, but that doctors or clinics, you know, will tell people whether they're a good candidate or a bad candidate. If I wanted a nose job, somebody might say that may or may not be what you want. Do stem cell clinics turn people away as bad candidates for this therapy?
I wish I knew. In the seminars I went to, I can't recall that I had them say that anybody was a bad candidate.
Who did you see in those seminars, in the seats, looking to learn more?
This was one of the saddest things of reporting the whole story, is seeing people who are in desperate need of some kind of help, and modern medicine has run out of options for them. By and large, it was an older crowd, people who clearly had trouble. A lot of people came in with canes; they had trouble walking. And when the seminar that's in the podcast, 3 people were in wheelchairs. They have terrible problems, and I listened to them being told that stem cells were the answer, and if they're turning people away, I didn't hear it. I'm sure it probably happens, but every indication that I can get, it's going to work. It's a miracle cure, and it's going to work.
So it was interesting, the sort of question of culpability. If a batch of stem cells is contaminated in some way, one has to ask, did that happen at the place where the drugs were injected? Did it happen at the distribution facility? Did it happen at the lab where they were fabricated? How much were you able to learn about that?
In the Livion case, it's pretty clear, and the CDC did an investigation, and they asked those questions. And your first thought would be they were contaminated at the office where they got the injections, because that's the most logical explanation. In the Houston case, that was not, I mean, they ruled that out, that the septic technique was fine. And especially because you had this contamination going on across the country. Mm-hmm. They traced it back to the laboratory where the stem cells were made. And they issued a report on that in about a year ago, in December of 2018. One of the shocking things for me, though, was when I went to one of the seminars. And actually, I went to 2 seminars from Livion. Only one of them is in the podcast. And in both of those, they told the audience that it was contamination in the doctor's office, which I was surprised, because this was long
even after the CDC ruling.
Yes. Huh. Yes. Even after the CDC report was out, I heard them say in the seminars that it happened in doctor's offices.
So people in the audience knew about the contamination?
I don't know. Hmm. It was couched in the way of, if you've heard about this, if you've seen this on the internet, if you Google us, you'll see that there was this you'll see that this contamination occurred, but it wasn't our fault.
That's one of those challenging moments, I would imagine, for you as a journalist. Did you want to, like, raise your hand and say, that's not the information I have?
I did, but I couldn't contradict it there. But I knew that people believed that it did. Now, interestingly enough, this was also at a time when John Kolsosharan, the CEO of the company, was not saying this. He was saying it was at our at the laboratory that we had it made. It was 100% product failure. Or early on, he had thought it was doctor error. Like early on, he thought that that was the case. But I think after the investigation, and he told me it was product error. So, yeah, it was a little surreal that the CEO of the company, I've heard him say it was the fault of the lab. And then in the seminar, I was told something different. But I have to take that back. Then the medical education director of the company also told me that he wasn't sure it was product error, which was also surprising to me.
Where is this lab located?
It's closed now, but it was in San Diego.
It would seem like some kind of county, state, federal inspector would have to walk through. I don't know that much about these things, but it seems like someone would have to check any kind of product that was going to be injected into human beings.
Well, they did. The FDA did, but they didn't do it until June of 2018, I believe. I'm going to forget the exact date. They did eventually get there, but this was after the company had already been making product. And then they didn't issue the FDA inspection report, didn't come out publicly until after the contamination was already known. So they came out and said, yeah, the lab is doing all these things wrong. But it was after that was clear because a bunch of people were sick.
Can this stuff be sourced from overseas?
I don't know. That's a good question. You mean the birth products? I don't know. I do know there are several companies making it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next on the line, we have Jeannie calling from Dallas, Texas. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. Thank you so much. Great program you've got. And my question is, well, actually, I've received platelet-rich fibrin, which is a form of stem cell, but it's not an injection, and it was actually made in my dentist's office. He took some blood, and a platelet-rich fibrin plug was made before some dental work where a couple of teeth were removed, and they put it in the site where the teeth were removed, and it helps to prevent infection. And I had a very good experience with that. So I'm wondering now, can injectable stem cells be made from our blood in the doctor's office? Why do we have to be buying somebody else's stem cells?
Thanks for calling. What do you know about that, Laura?
So that's something different. Those are not stem cells. It's a different kind of blood cell. And I have heard that's commonly used. My son's about to have his wisdom teeth out, and his oral surgeon, who's a very good oral surgeon, mentioned that as well. That's not stem cells. But her question is a good question, and you don't have to. The products that we're talking about that are in the podcast are made from birth tissues, so they're from another baby. But if you want your own tissues moved, that's where you can have bone marrow, cells from your bone marrow or cells from your fat. So you can use your own cells in that way. And that's what that's also very, very common that doctors are doing it. But you're not going to get that at your chiropractor's office because you have to be an MD.
When you talk to scientists who are trying to research how this technology might ultimately be used in a way that's fully vetted and approved, how far do they say we are away from using stem cells for the kinds of conditions that it's being marketed for at this moment?
A long way. And it's very frustrating to the legitimate scientific research industry, and that they're trying to do this the right way, and yet there are people already out there selling it. But yeah, we're still a long way from knowing it. And that's one of the frustrations for people. One of the criticisms is that, well, it takes too long. It takes too long to go through the process of testing this and developing it and getting it FDA approved. And people need cures now. And I understand that. And that is the case. But it takes a long time because we have to understand it. And we have to do the studies. And there is nothing, even the most even something you would think would work, there's nothing you can say without studying it. One of the best examples I can think of this is vitamin E for cancer prevention. Vitamin E is an antioxidant. In the laboratory animal studies, it looked great. And we thought, oh, well, of course, then it makes sense. It's common sense that this would work. Well, if everything went by common sense, we wouldn't need science. And when we actually did the studies on vitamin E for cancer prevention, a big study of men with to prevent prostate cancer, we found out that not only did vitamin E not prevent cancer, but it increased the odds of cancer. Hmm. So you can't assume that something is going to work without doing the studies. You have to keep in mind 90% of drugs, of 90% of experimental drugs that go into clinical trials, which means the data is so promising that we're going to go through the time and expense of taking those into clinical trials. 90% of the time, they don't get approved because it doesn't work. It doesn't work like we think it was. So if you consider that 90% of things that look promising aren't going to cross the finish line, we can't just say with stem cells, oh, we know it works. We don't need to study it.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. This whole story, Laura, makes me think about what a complicated relationship lay people have to science in America. On the one hand, we distrust science. We say studies change all the time. Who knows what you can believe? On the other hand, we hear about a miracle cure with like a veneer of science, and boy, do we get excited.
That's true. That's true. And I don't know why that is. And I don't want to put a burden on people to really understand how clinical trials are done. I don't fault people for not understanding that and understanding how drugs get there. What I do fault is people who should know better making false claims and selling false hope. But I don't think we can blame people for being susceptible to this, especially because if you're really sick and you have an intractable condition and you don't have options, you want to believe. You want to believe. My dad had Parkinson's disease. I wanted to believe that something would cure him that wasn't yet available. So I don't really blame patients for it. But I do blame people who make claims who should know better.
Would you put every clinic offering stem cells in that category?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I think it's a mix. I think some people offering stem cells, some doctors, chiropractors, they truly want to do good by their patients. And I think they do believe it. Or at the very least, they think it won't cause harm and that patients deserve a shot at it. So I wouldn't put everybody in the category of a scam. But I do think they're probably people out there who are offering it, who do know that they're not going to help people, but they can make a lot of money offering it.
Do you know if there are like clinics overseas that are offering this now? Like if the U.S. decides to fully ban this kind of thing, will people be able to go to Mexico or Canada or somewhere
else? Oh, yeah. I mean, that was the norm before it was offered everywhere, is people were going overseas. And they were going to Costa Rica, to Mexico, to Asia. I mean, oh, yeah. And that's still going on. And that's still going on because there are some restrictions in the United States as to what you can do with your cells. So if you want to take your own cells, but you want to go beyond what the FDA calls minimal manipulation, you want to grow them, you want to concentrate them, you want to make more of them, you want to treat some chronic condition, you do still have to go overseas for that.
Are people who get these treatments required to sign some kind of waiver that says, if I am very seriously damaged by this treatment, I will not pursue legal action?
That I don't know, but I do know they sign informed consent. And the informed consent form that, for example, Elaine Dilley signed, in that form, it strongly implied that the treatment was FDA approved.
Really?
And reading the form, from the wording on the form, she got the impression that it was FDA approved.
So what do you recommend to people who have heard about this, who even listening to this conversation have heard a couple people call in and say, it worked for me, and want to try it? Like what kind of information should they bring with them into this process of making this decision?
Well, first you should ask your doctor, like, what are the odds that this is going to help me? And really investigate the claims. For example, there is evidence that you could with one of these injections in your joint feel better, but there's no evidence yet. It's not proven that it's going to regrow your cartilage. So it may help you. It may reduce inflammation. It may help you, but not for the reason that you think it is. So first, you need to really understand what we know about this. I would say that's question number one. If you have a disease like Parkinson's or some chronic disease or MS where there is research going on and it is promising, I would say find a clinical trial. One, it won't cost you. If it's a legitimate clinical trial and you qualify for it, you will not be charged for the treatment. And even if it doesn't help you, it will still help the knowledge that, you know, we learn from what doesn't work as much as we learn from what does work. So you can at least, it might help you. And even if it doesn't help, it'll help advance the science. So look at like clinicaltrials.gov and see if you can find a clinical trial of stem cells.
Laura Beal is a health and science writer and creator and host of the 6-part podcast, Bad Batch. She also wrote and hosted the podcast, Dr. Death. Laura, it's been really interesting. Thank you for spending this
time
with us.
Thank you so much. It was great.
You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle is at KERA Think. We have a podcast too here. You can find it using your favorite podcast app. And you can learn about upcoming shows at our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.